Hello and welcome to Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. I'm Ryan Bickle. On today's show, Jordan Longton, a keeper here at Blank Park Zoo, has returned from in the field work. And we spoke with her a couple weeks ago about her upcoming trip. And she's back and she's going to tell us all about it. Looks like she had a good time. Welcome to the show, Jordan.
Thank you.
And Jessie Lowry's here, and she's our director of conservation and research. And Jessie, why don't you get things started today?
Thanks, Ryan. Super excited to talk to Jordan today. She just got back a couple days ago. And so, Ryan, this will actually be the first time that we have heard these stories. And so really excited to hear all about your trip. But first, I always like to set the stage and talk about Blank Park Zoo as a modern zoo and its role in saving animals in the wild. The mission of Blank Park Zoo is to inspire an appreciation of the natural world through conservation, education, research, and recreation. I see it as a window to the wild, a place where we invite the community and schools and families to have a fun, affordable day out on the town and see some amazing animals. But then when they leave the zoo, know in their heart something that they can do in their own lives that's going to help save wild animals and help the environment as a whole. And so we've actually got an audience of about 500,000 people a year. So we've got a fantastic opportunity and responsibility to get these messages out. And so Blank Park Zoo works to help wild animals in lots of different ways. One way is by simply being as sustainable as we possibly can in our business practices. Even here in Iowa with the ocean really far away and we don't have any rainforests nearby, what we consume, especially single-use plastics, has a direct effect on wildlife. And so we try to, here at the zoo, conserve our natural resources, conserve water, recycle everything that we can, and we encourage our public audience to do so as well. Also, if you want to make the biggest bang for your buck for the environment, taking care of your local environment is really important. And so here at Blank Park Zoo, we encourage people to plant butterfly gardens. We also go out and remove invasive plant species from local parks to help increase wildlife habitat, really trying to address those root problems of species decline and habitat destruction. One of the best things that a zoo can do, and accredited zoos, there's about 239 in the U.S., and altogether we give about $200 million to save animals in the wild. And that money goes to field researchers. Those are the people, the individuals, and organizations that are out on the front lines in the range countries of the animals that we have here. So, for example, we have rhinos, and we support rhinos in Indonesia and Africa through the International Rhino Foundation. We have hornbills here at Blank Park Zoo, so we've supported Hornbill Research Foundation in Thailand for over a decade. We support Snow Leopard Trust. And, of course, we support Giraffe Conservation Foundation. We have supported them since about 2011, and they are the world's leading organization on the ground in every country of which giraffe exists in Africa, working to save them from extinction. And so we financially support these projects. We also send them gear, help build their capacity. And one thing that we've started the past few years is our Staff Conservation Fund, where we can actually send Blank Park Zoo staff members with our varied expertise here at the zoo into the wild, into these range countries to help with the field organizations. A lot of these field organizations are small nonprofits, and they are working in challenging conditions out in the field. And we are here in Iowa with 60 full-time staff and experts in everything from graphic design to veterinary medicine to husbandry to giraffe. And we have one of our giraffe experts here today, Jordan. And that's why we sent her to work for a Giraffe Conservation Foundation, because we can lend our expertise to help within the wild conservation. So, Jordan, welcome again. We're so excited to have you.
Thank you. It's good to be back. It was really awesome getting to get out of the snow for a little bit. And at least when I came back, it was like still in the 60s. But back to the cold.
You did miss quite a bit of snow.
I did.
Probably more snow than we've had in the past 2 or 3 years combined.
And I was just really bummed about that. it was such a great opportunity. And I really didn't know what to expect. I've never left the country before. So this whole endeavor was really intimidating. But it was really, I was just inspired by previous coworkers who have gone before. So I kind of knew what a great opportunity it was in general just to even go and help out with this organization that we all really respect, especially us that work with Giraffe. We know how big of a deal it is when most people don't even know they are they're endangered. And so to not only get to spread that message here at the zoo, but then to get to work with the people who even found that out, who are doing the population surveys, who are translocating giraffe into areas that used to have giraffe but no longer do. And so it's just been a great learning experience to see firsthand the kind of research that's involved with conservation.
The passion that I can hear in your voice, it just makes me so pleased. And you are exactly the kind of candidate that we love to fund through Blank Park Zoo Staff Conservation Fund. And by the way, a portion of every dollar made at Blank Park Zoo goes to this fund and helps to save animals in the wild. And you mentioned a couple of their staff members have gone. We had our supervisor of large mammal, Lou, volunteer for the Ziwa Rhino Sanctuary in Uganda. And a former keeper here, Nikki, worked for a Giraffe Conservation Foundation. And your team member, Pat, on the large mammal mm-hmm. team, also worked for Giraffe Conservation Foundation. And you also mentioned that folks don't know that giraffe are endangered. And the population status of giraffe is often referred to as the silent extinction. Because when people think of Africa and they think about maybe going on that lifelong dream trip of a safari in Africa, the first thing that pops into your mind is giraffe. And everybody really thinks that giraffe are just fine and they're an icon of Africa and they're always going to be fine. But they've really declined dramatically in the past couple decades. Mm-hmm. And so let's talk a little bit more about giraffe conservation in general before we talk about your trip. What is happening to giraffe in the wild? What are some of the threats?
Well, it's hard to define and pinpoint one threat. Unlike for rhinos and elephants, poaching is number one. You know, humans coming for their horns or their tusks. But unlike that, giraffe, it's really, you know, a multitude of different factors. There's, you know, poaching is some of them. Some local communities do hunt them for food and for their skin, and a lot of their tail is actually used for little trinkets that they sell. So there is that side of it. However, a lot of it is just human populations moving into their natural habitat. And so there just isn't enough of the wild space that there used to be. And without opportunities and designated spaces for these giraffe populations have just been kind of crammed into these smaller areas, and diseases because of these, you know, certain situations that's kind of wiped out a part of the population. So I think in the last 20 years, it's declined at least 40%. So it's just really happening rapidly now, unless there is something that changes.
So you're talking about a decrease in habitat overall, and such big animals are going to have quite large ranges and will need to mm-hmm. use a lot of different landscapes in large areas. But also you spoke about habitat fragmentation. And so not only is there less habitat, but then the habitat is broken up into smaller patches. And so just like you said, a disease that might normally not affect the entire population could have a bigger effect mm-hmm. because the population is fragmented and perhaps there's not as easy transferring of genes, and so you can mm-hmm. have some bottleneck in the genetics, yeah. and all of these things are happening to giraffe and rhino and a lot of these other charismatic species. And so what we need to do as a modern zoo and as field researchers is figure out how the giraffe are using their habitat and, mm-hmm. and to really inform management practices.
Exactly, yeah. And that's actually what GCF is doing in Namibia now, and which is the project I was going to help with. They're doing a lot of population surveys to find out more than one thing, but one of the big things they're looking for is what drives population movement, because they are limited in their space and their range. It surprises a lot of people, but a lot of Africa is fenced off. There are a lot of owned land or reserves that might be used for game hunting, but really they just are not even, they're restricted in where they can even go off and breed. So in water, you know, the wet season is fairly short in the year, and it's a very hot, dry desert. So they are moving with where the water is. And so that drives a big movement with the populations as well. And so that's one of the big things they're looking for on these population surveys, going through these areas and seeing, you know, how many are there? Were they there last year? Is this typical for this time of year, and then just to kind of put pieces together to kind of see what can be done, how they can work with local communities, to see how they can help and if they can work together to kind of assist in these things. If something needs to change, you know, they need to work together with the people that are actually living there.
We always talk about the holistic view of conservation, that conservation is about people. It's about many places of biodiversity. You know, hotspots are also places of crushing human poverty. And we need to work with local people to encourage sustainable use of natural resources, and increasing education. And like you said, engaging with the local stakeholders is the only way to do mm-hmm. conservation work. And we know that Giraffe Conservation Foundation is really good at that.
Yeah, they're excellent at that. Julian has really created a great movement, and one of the things that I was really surprised was that, because, you know, you can stick your ground and say they shouldn't do this, or how could they be doing this when animals are at stake, but you need to think about that. When I was there, you know, you hear about that, you know, the poverty that's there, and being there and seeing it firsthand really sets it in, because these people, they have next to nothing. And so what they have is their livestock. They have their cattle and they have their herd of goats, and they really rely on the cattle and goats to feed themselves. So, they kind of move and they're, you know, eating the vegetation and stuff. And that's kind of the struggle for the wildlife that's competing for that. But when you think about what these people have, you can't tell them to not, you know, that's what their livelihood is. And so one of the big things with, you know, the tourist business and stuff, and what GCF has really done well is, you know, compromising with it and saying, like, well, we can put a researcher on the ground. Mm-hmm. We can have people, you know, have these local people be guides and educate people on giraffe conservation while they're there. They live in the area and they can have an investment in these animals. And so I think it's brilliant, for one, because it's, you know, they're going to be living there anyway, and tourists are going to come anyway. And why not get the local people excited about these animals and excited about saving them? And then if they know better, they can, you know, spread that in their community too. So it's GCF's done a great job with working with the local communities.
It's a wonderful example of providing those opportunities for sustainable livelihoods. And mm-hmm. I know you and I are both moms of young yes. little girls. And so we would agree that if we were in that same situation, we would be overusing the resources too.
Absolutely.
Because it's people are just trying to support their
family.
They're
just trying to live.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that was one of the best things about it. And it doesn't sound great. But Emma Hart, who is leading the Namibia research now for GCF, she's working on her PhD and kind of continuing the project that Julian Fennessy had begun years ago. And so that she was the one leading this project. And, you know, we just talked about such great things, and she's such a strong supporter about, you know, sustainable living and not leaving we all leave footprints, but to really minimize the effect and the impact that you have. And you just mentioning, because, you know, you're out there, there's not fridges, you know, there's not anything. You're drinking warm water, and it's got silt in it, and, you know, and she's like, it's safe. And so you realize, like, you know, when we're here, and some, you know, food's been left on the table, and you're like, oh, it's been 2 hours, that's gross. But then you get there, and you're like, this is what we have, and this is the water we drink, and you know, this is how people are living. And it's, you know, you get, it's not after a while, it's fine, but it is just surprising, because then you see these people that are walking for hours a day to get this water, and how, you know, to even complain about it just is shameful. And so, it was really eye-opening. And I think that was a really rewarding experience in itself, is to experience it firsthand, the kind of lifestyle, and, really appreciate the you know, the clean water, and it, you know, it was safe water, but mm-hmm. just the, you know, the clean cold water that we have here that we leave our tap on when we're brushing our teeth, or, you know, we take a long shower, and how precious that water is over there. And it was just really eye-opening to see that.
I'm so glad that you had that experience, and it is a lesson for all of us that we need to continually remind ourselves to really conserve all that we can. Mm-hmm. And we're so used to overusing resources.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the specific goals of your trip. And did you achieve the goals? And tell us about the conservation activities that you took part in.
Yeah. So as I mentioned, Emma's kind of continuing this population survey. And so what we're doing is these dry riverbeds. So the water doesn't come until, you know, March or April. And so we were just finishing the dry season in Namibia in that northwest region. So we were kind of doing our study in both the, there's an Horsib riverbed and the Wanab. And so we spent a few days in each. And what we did was we basically have our safari vehicle and we just drive up and down these riverbeds. And try to find giraffe. And I think it was just the coolest thing because they have books on every individual they've ever seen there. And so we spot one. So you have, everybody's got their eyes out and you're trying to just drive through. And it's surprising how hard it is to see these 1,000-pound animals because you'd think they'd really stick out. But in their natural habitat, they really they're perfectly designed because they're difficult to see. But it really...
Good camouflage.
For, and, you know, these are desert-dwelling giraffe. These are the Angolan giraffe down in Namibia. And so they're a little bit lighter colored. So they really blend in with the sand and the mountains. And it got to be like a really fun game to try to find them. You're driving and you just keep your eyes peeled the whole time. And so if we spot one, someone just hollers, giraffe! And then every once in a while, you're like, never mind, it's a stick. But mostly, you wait until you're sure before you holler out. And then we stop and we try to get as close as we can. And giraffe are really great to study. They're really curious creatures, even in the wild. So you can get up fairly close. And so what we do is we take a picture. Someone's writing down the GPS location, the sex, the estimated age, you know, is a sub-adult or an adult or a juvenile. And then we get the camera back and we look through these books. We pick out one spot that we see that might be a little unique and you flip through these books and you try to find through and find this individual. And it can be really difficult sometimes. And then, you know, throughout the week we got really good at it. It was me and another keeper from Milwaukee. And it was actually pretty awesome because she was there when Zola was born and Zola came to us last year. And so we got to talk about that and that was pretty fun. She's showed me some pictures of Zola when she was a baby. It was great. But to be with another keeper who's just as passionate, and we had a blast and it was fun research. A lot of driving. But then at the end of the day, we'd get back and we'd input all the data in a computer. This all just goes to continuing the research that they're doing and looking at social structures of wild giraffe, looking at population movements, looking at DNA. So we also, in the books, they mark if they have been darted for a DNA skin sample. And so this dart is really, it's like a fly bite to them. It's just a quick in and out. And then the searching part takes forever. We have to try to find where that dart landed. And then you put it in these little tubes and they send them off. And so that is one of the big, it's really one of the more groundbreaking findings that they've been doing with these giraffe is doing DNA sampling and figuring out the genetic you know, variety of these animals, and it's led to some pretty big discoveries. And so it was fun to get to see that down on the ground and see, you know, you can't do a million in a day, you know, and most of them have really been, I'd say about 70 to 75% in that area have been already, you know, gotten their skin sampled. So it was pretty cool to see that. So we did maybe three or four of that. Yeah, so that was really just, we spent a couple days in the Horsib, and then we spent a couple days in the Wanab, and even in these two similar areas, you know, they were pretty geographically, they just looked a little different, but they were just beautiful, and, you know, it's, we were working pretty much from sun up to sundown, but it was just enjoyable work the whole time, you know, it's just, there's nothing wrong with just driving around Africa looking for a giraffe. That was just not a bad job.
Do you notice any, like, personality differences between the giraffe at Blank Park Zoo and wild giraffe?
Personality in that they are not, I mean, they're habituated to humans in the sense that they do see safari cars driving through. We did pass a good number of cars that were, you know, either guide led by the locals looking for the elephants in the area or people that have just decided to take this journey on themselves, which I think they're crazy because it's the desert and there's not roads. So you'd have to be a pretty expert traveler, but they're habituated to these cars. But, you know, if you wanted to get out of the car, they would want to get away and they wouldn't come up for, you know, for attention or treats like ours do. But there is just interesting seeing how similar they are. We did get to see a good number of babies that had been born within, you know, 2 weeks to a month, which was adorable. And to see, we sat and watched, and they played. They played with, you know, they're being frisky with the baby, and that's just exactly what ours do. And it was just really cute to watch because, I mean, they're just the same, you know. They're just fun to watch, and they're still curious creatures. So we drive up, and they just keep their eyes on us, like, "What are you guys doing over here?" Like, you know, they weren't afraid or anything. So,
what have you learned from Blank Park Zoo's giraffe that helped you be an asset to Giraffe Conservation Foundation? What did you know something? Could you recognize a different gait about a particular animal, and maybe they had a foot problem, or you know the height of trees that they need to forage from, or anything like that?
It really was. You know, Emma has done this research for about 2 years, so she's, you know, she didn't start out as a giraffe person at all, but you know, she's learned a lot. I think one of the fun things was that she said she learns a lot from us zookeepers, because we come and she's like, "I've learned so much from, you know, because you guys get firsthand experience up close with these animals." And I think one of the things that we just, you know, what we can offer is that insight about what they are like as a species when you work with them. And so just even talking about our giraffe from home and just what's typical and how, you know, how it might be different within captivity or, you know, in the wild. And, but I think just mostly we're really good at, you know, picking up patterns and stuff. That's the biggest thing. And just to be able to do that. I know one of the guys who was on our trip, he was not a zookeeper and he just had the heart. He couldn't do it. And so I think it does help that, you know, you're just so, you know, you love these animals so much and, you know, you see them all the time, and we could recognize things like just seeing skin disease on them. You know, we did mark that down, and that's pretty interesting, too, because that's pretty much just as prevalent in the wild as it is in captivity. And it's just like a, you know, it's not enough is known about it, but it is something that when we look at it, we can spot it, too. And so, you know, if we're looking at a giraffe, like, oh, you can see that it's got something on the shoulder, and so we can mark that down, and that goes in the information as well.
It almost seems like it needs to be a computer application that can look at the pattern on a giraffe and match it up with an existing photo. It seems
we were
like
talking about that, how, you know, that'd be a pretty fun thing. And I think a lot of people would be excited about doing that kind mm-hmm. of thing. And, mm-hmm. You know, they do have things like that for different species that are different conservation groups are doing that, but it's not done yet. Just because mostly it has to be done with internet access.
Yeah, I don't have a good Wi-Fi signal.
Yeah, so.
What surprised you the most about your trip?
Ah, wow. I don't know. Everything was surprising because I had never been to Namibia and I didn't know enough about it, but it's gorgeous there. I thought desert would be blah. You know, it's like hot desert sand and it was gorgeous. There's mountains everywhere. I was surprised at how many giraffe we saw. Overall, we had about 150 sightings of giraffes. So a lot of those were, you know, repeats. We'd see, you know, one of the girls one day, and the next day we saw her again with a different group. And so that was really fun. One of the things that surprised me as a keeper, because that was something I was really interested in too, was the social structure research they were kind of doing, is to see, do they form bonds? Do you typically see them with the same giraffe? And the answer is kind of no. I mean, they do form bachelor herds. So there are zoos in America and all across the world that do keep bachelor herds. And, you know, people might think, oh, that's not natural, but it's 100% natural. We saw so many groups of just a bunch of boys, little boys club. And it was just fun to see them together too. We actually got to see two males necking, and that was incredible. And so he's done.
Explain that because someone might not understand what that is.
It's their form of fighting, and it's only the males do it, and they do it for either territory or access to females. And so that's where they kind of line up next to each other, and then they swing their head around and try to, you know, knock the other guy with their ossicones. So they're not their horns, their ossicones on the top of their head. And that is basically the use for them. The females don't need them for that, so. But it was really cool because we'd actually watched one of these males walk across this desert plain into this riverbed area. And right away he was greeted by this male who said, "What are you doing here?" And so he lined right up and they just kind of went at it a little bit. And it was really, you know, it's not as common to see. So we were very lucky to get to witness that. So, And then just to even see the social structures, you know, sometimes you'd see a female all alone just eating a tree. And then the next day you might see her with a group of three or four and a, you know, a sub-adult. And, you know, just, you know, you worry when you have animals in captivity, like when you send them out to a different facility, like, is this going to affect them? And it's, you know, it's natural for them to move around. And, you know, they do form bonds every once in a while. You know, the young ones do like to stay with the mom groups. But once they get older, they kind of do their own thing. And so it was really nice to see that, and know that what we're doing here, is, you know, it's not as different. It's not unnatural for them to be with these groups, or if they need to be moved to a different facility, that's not uncommon for them in the wild to be moving throughout groups. So that was really cool.
We've only got a couple minutes left, and I just have to ask, did you see any other animals besides giraffe? Anything cool that you want
to
know?
Yeah, well, we got to our first camp, and, you know, you drive around it, and you see a bunch of elephant poop, and we were, right away, we were greeted by the guy who was running this camp, and he says, oh, we don't have any water. The elephants came through last night and pulled up all the pipes. And we're like, oh, good. Okay, so we know there's elephants that come through camp. And so we, you know, we kind of, the first night we're just like, okay, we'll just make sure we keep our tents close to the car. And so the next day we were kind of just doing our research in the evening. And then we hear a huge crack and we look around. And then Joan kind of goes up and looks around. She's like, I don't see anything. And then we hear Emma saying, he's about 100 yards away. And so he's just sitting there eating his branch. And we're like, okay, well, we'll just leave him be. But we're like, okay, we know a big bull elephant is around camp. So we're just kind of doing our thing. And then we hear Joan, the other keeper, she goes, he's coming towards you. And this giant elephant is strolling right up to our car. So we calmly scramble into our car as I dive through the trunk. But I still want to see him. So I'm like, oh, my gosh. And he was very calm. But we turned the car in because we were going to try to get out. But that kind of spooked him. But he really, it was just incredible to see this wild elephant who is huge, 10 feet from the car. And then he just kind of strolled on down his way to the canyon to get some water, probably. But that was a really, it was a incredible experience after we knew we were safe, of course.
But thank you so much, Jordan, for all your important work that you did with Giraffe Conservation Foundation and the wonderful care that you take care of our animals and how you educate the public. Each and every person that comes and talks to you, I'm sure, is very inspired about giraffe conservation.
Thank you. And thank you to Blake Park Zoo for giving me this opportunity. There's no other way I'd even know about this without the zoo. And so as a keeper, it was really meaningful to get to go to do this when I love our giraffe so much and to, you know, get to be a small part of helping them in the wild. So I just want to say thank you to you guys as well.
All right. Thanks a lot for joining us today. And that's all the time we have for now. So if you want to learn more about Blank Park Zoo, go to our website, blankparkzoo.com. We'll see you next time on Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo.